Hello, fellow baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to episode 10 of the Johnny and Josh Show. Number 10, one of my favorite numbers in the Bible, a symbol of perfection, harmony, and creation. How ironic is that, given that I'm joined by the retrobates that are Eric the producer, JC, and Big Davey Lengel. Boys, how are you?
Let's see how fast we can sin.
Congrats on the big victory yesterday.
Thank you so much. I want to just have a point. Can you see? For those watching on YouTube, I'm just showing the boys on the screen my shirt. I'm wearing it in honor. It's one of my famous touring shirts with the legendary Caution Boys that, of course, became the Cobras, my son's rugby club. We played our last game. My 13 years as head coach came to an end today in a heroic and exciting 36-34 victory against the mighty Dings of Bristol. It was a ding-dong battle, boys, excuse the pun, and 13 years
of
service.
Speaking of ding-dong,
this week on the local rugby report, starring Johnny Gould. Johnny, Kelly, give us what's going on in local rugby.
There's only one story, big guy, and I've just told it. Right, let's focus.
I think it's the Johnny and Johnny show.
It is now. Let's focus on the number 10, first of all, because, of course, we've referenced a few legendary baseball players that have worn that number. I think there's only one even worth noting. The Chip.
Who's that?
Chipper Jones.
I'm just kidding.
The data
relax.
Of who's
relax, buddy.
Don't know that.
He's only called the Chip on this side of the pond. He's called the French Fry in the States.
Oh, you mean Larry? Are you talking about Larry?
Well,
Larry Jones?
Yeah.
Larry Jones. He was okay, Larry Jones.
Yeah, he had your number, Big Dave. Every time you went to Shea in the old days.
I know. He named his kid Shea, blah, blah, yeah. Yes. I know.
Any other notables? Anybody want to throw in any other notable tens?
Walt Clyde Frazier.
That's on sport. Wow. Barky Anderson, when he was in Cincinnati, they retired his number as manager.
Was it Phil Rizzuto, number 10?
I believe so. Tony La Russa.
Mm-hmm.
Tony La Russa.
Exactly. I heard of him. One.
No, maybe you're right. He had a one.
Now I have to look it up.
Tony La Russa is number 10.
No, we're talking about Phil Rizzuto.
Can I just point out that next week is episode 11? Very excited about that. We'll be doing a Spinal Tap reference, no doubt. We'll move on from that. haven't seen it.
And this is where I've got to remind the audience again, for those of you who are new to the show, we chastised Johnny Gould for never having seen Spinal Tap. And
still haven't.
I sent him a DVD because we couldn't believe he didn't understand the reference of going up to 11. He has less than 7 days now to watch Spinal Tap before episode 11. That if it doesn't happen, then it's just called the Josh Show.
Hang on. Because if you're going to challenge me, you've got to challenge Dave, who's never seen the Blues Brothers.
I don't care about the Blues Brothers. Let's be honest.
No, well, that's for a later show. But
just want to confirm for Rizzuto was number 10.
He was, right? Yeah. I just looked it up. You beat me to it. Okay. I stand corrected.
You were going to give me.
Can I do a COVID
actually,
update?
I sit corrected.
Can I do a COVID update? And this I'm finding really frustrating. Two additional clubs qualified this week, which raises the total to a rather pathetic 16. So it is a majority, but still 14 clubs have yet to reach the 85% vaccination, which obviously allows for a relaxing of the protocol. This isn't very impressive, is it, JC? Why aren't they all done by now?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to surprise me that everyone wouldn't sort of jump on this bandwagon, but, you know, Major League Baseball can't force every single player to do so, but they can put pressure on them. I think the best part of the way this is working out in the United States is we're getting inching closer and closer to full capacity stadiums. Fenway Park was opened up for full capacity, I believe, on Saturday. Dodger Stadium on June 15th. So you're getting some of the halcyon cathedrals of baseball that are going to have near capacity or full capacity here.
The Phillies have just announced they're going back to full capacity at Citizens Bank Park on June the 4th in their matchup with the Nats. This is one stat that does make good reading. This season, there have been 62 positive COVID-19 tests. Obviously, that's not great for the individuals concerned, but that is of 34 players and 28 members of staff. But that's from 176,260 tests, which is 0.035% positive rate. That is good news. But we need to get these teams all vaccinated. This is ridiculous. 16 isn't good enough. There are 14 out there. They need to pull their socks up. What's happening over on the border, Eric? Any news?
Well, guess what? The Canadian border still closed. But okay. The Toronto Blue Jays have now said goodbye to Dunedin. They've now left their spring training facility, which they've been using for this first quarter of the season as their home ground. And they'll be playing their first game in Buffalo as of Tuesday, June 1st. And get this, anybody who shows up at the game on June 1st and June 2nd to see the Blue Jays, there will be a pop-up vaccination center outside Salem Field, the Buffalo Bison Stadium. And anybody who takes the vaccine will get a free ticket for a Buffalo Bison game in 2022. I think it's a nice
one. I like that dynamic pricing for COVID vaccination, right? Yeah. Like, it's $80 if you haven't been vaccinated. It's $10 if you have. And you know, give people a reason to get vaccinated for the love of their sport.
Absolutely.
Can they not give them a Jays game, though? I mean, come on.
Well, actually, no. Part of the vaccination, you can point to a raffle where you can win a Toronto Blue Jays signed jersey, Toronto Blue Jays and also a press box.
The other good news is, of course, the Blue Jays really need help hitting the ball. And my understanding is Buffalo's a hitter's park. So that's good news for the Jays, because let's face it, they haven't been hitting that many runs. That was sarcasm before you are getting on my case.
Jump on you.
You were indeed. Yeah. I know. Let's move on. Trivia. What's our trivia this week, Eric? Anything that I might have heard of?
Trivia of the week, actually, because I was, you know, we've seen a few manager ejections in the past few weeks, which is, you know, I'm not saying being ejected as a manager is an art form or a dying art, but I was thinking, we all know that Bobby Cox has the all-time record for most ejections by an umpire with 161, and the current active manager with the most ejections from a game is Tony La Russa with 88.
I was going to say.
So my question to you, gentlemen, is which one of these three is second to Tony La Russa for most ejections as a manager?
Luis Rojas.
Is it A, Joe Maddon? Or is it B, Terry Francona? Or is it C, Bob Melvin? So which of those three managers have been ejected the most times?
Bomel. They call him Bomel.
Bomel, yes. Which of those managers have been ejected the most times? And you know, current active managers, that is.
It's a good question. Those guys have been around. Yeah. You know, you think of the manager carousel, and then you mention those three managers and think, man, those guys have been
any of them. That's why it's survivors.
It seems to be like a compiling longevity stat.
I think it's a great one. I mean, compared to your usual trivia,
They're all great. Moving on.
Usually the questions are very poor, but this is actually a good one, Eric.
Where's the waffle? Did you bring the waffle today?
Okay, no, this time I remembered the bell, but you get that. Okay, speaking of waffle, I accidentally ate the last waffle this morning with my coffee.
Accidentally? I thought you were asleep.
I thought I had a waffle. Stash, and then I realized, and I grabbed the waffle, and I realized, oh no, that was the last one. I didn't have time.
He wakes up in a puddle with just waffle.
But hang on, why didn't you run out and get new waffles?
Because I was too busy preparing this damn show. There we go. Moving on.
Excuses, Grumpy. Excuses.
Leadoff batter. This is, of course, let's face it, it's been 7 days since our last show, and lots happened in baseball. So that's why we give you the news roundup. Right, we're going to start with a bad story, guys. Atlanta Braves outfielder Marcell Ozuna has been charged with felony assault after physically harming his wife. He was arrested Saturday. He apparently choked his wife. This is terrible. Threw her against a wall. Now, this is not allegedly. I don't need to say allegedly. Why? Because this is according to Sandy Springs, Georgia police, who say they witnessed the incident. He's now being held in Fulton County Jail.
Oh, so he's going to go down for this properly.
Well, this is a felony that he's been charged with that carries a minimum of 3 years and a maximum of 20 years in prison.
Wow.
This is serious stuff.
I've got to tell you this is heartbreaking. Every instance of this is disgusting and heartbreaking. But what is surprising is we've seen it too often in baseball amongst baseball players. We've seen it with Theraldis Chapman, who is, you know, obviously involved, implicated in this sort of instance. We've seen this with Jose Reyes. And I don't understand why it happens necessarily with baseball players. I mean, obviously other sports as well too, but it's just something that needs to be dealt with.
Jonah Carey.
And it's hard because, you know, a lot of times this isn't one of those instances, but a lot of the players are able to kind of navigate their way through it and end up back in baseball. And I'm wondering, you know, where is the zero tolerance policy for it?
Let me just ask you on a legal perspective, purely just focusing aside from the awfulness of it, from a baseball perspective, where do the Atlanta Braves stand here? What is their involvement? I mean, can they? I mean, he's just signed, what was it, a 4-year, $65 million contract. Can they rip that up now? I mean, obviously, he's in breach of contract if he's proven to have done this.
Yeah, usually there's a morals clause. And along with the criminal investigation, there'll be a parallel Major League Baseball investigation in which they will impose sanctions on Ozuna. They don't need Ozuna to go to jail or be charged with a felony for them to instigate, you know, a long suspension for him. And if what you're saying is true, Gouldie, that it's just, you know, very apparent, then yeah. I hope that, you know, he pays a price. But again, his wife is going to pay the price too. And it's just heartbreaking. These stories are terrible and it's heartbreaking.
It's a lose-lose. Okay, well, let's focus on something a little less depressing. Albert, still doing well in LA. I saw him robbed of a home run from the Giants center fielder, Talkman, is it? Is that how you pronounce the name that's moved over just recently? But he has now just tied Babe Ruth for fourth place in extra base hits. That's a phenomenal achievement.
Can we slow down on the Pujols doing well? I mean, he's still hitting like 235. I mean,
he's not hitting 235. He's hitting right at 200.
Is he? I'll have to look again.
But you need to give him credit, right? You need to give him credit. He may be hitting 235 for the Dodgers overall.
That's what I'm talking about, for the Dodgers.
But the bottom line is, give him credit, right? There was all this talk about him being a prima donna. We sort of questioned it because the Angels floated it. And, you know, so far it seems from most accounts that he's been an ideal teammate. And he hasn't started regularly. You know, you've gotten Bellinger coming back. Once the Dodgers get back to full form, he's going to be near the end of that bench. And if he keeps a good attitude, you know, respect to him. I mean, that's all you got to say. I don't care whether he does poorly or well on the field. If he's a great clubhouse presence and that Dodger team does well, then he has given them what he is worth at this point.
I mean, if they get healthy, I guess at some point they get all these guys back, there may be a question of whether or not there's even a space for him on the roster.
I think, you know, he is going to be at the end of the bench, but I'd be shocked if they got rid of him, you know, okay, bringing him on in this situation. I could be wrong. I mean, we've been wrong about Pujols already once this year, right?
Yeah, let's not make too many commitments again. Just prove ourselves wrong again. Okay, one thing that's extraordinary, this is a story that isn't a story. No hitters this week. Surprise, surprise, zero no hitters. Although I think Bieber almost got one. I think the Tigers broke it up in the seventh. So that is good news. Let's move on, though, to something that's absolutely hilarious. Boys, you must have seen all the footage, the video on Twitter, etc., of the crazy Cubs base running against the Pirates. And this is, of course, Javier Baez, the Cubs shortstop, who, according to the manager, David Ross, he just creates havoc. I mean, it's havoc that should just not have applied. JC, take us through what happened.
Yeah, that's an absurd statement. I think that's a puffery on the part of David Ross wanting to make Baez feel good about himself. I mean, I've seen this play happen a number of times at the little league level. When I was 11 and 12, you see this happen. Baez hits a ground ball to the third baseman. He's going to be out by a mile. The third baseman throws the ball across the diamond to Will Craig, the first baseman. Baez stops and starts walking backwards to force Craig to either could have stepped back and stepped on the bag because he was pulled off a little bit, or to tag him. Will Craig is just lackadaisical in running towards Baez, and there's a runner on third base at this point. The runner sprints home. By the time Will Craig flips the ball to the catcher, the run scores. And then the second major error is on the part of Adam Frazier, the second baseman, who's not covering first base. You know, he's just standing there watching all this stupidity.
Why wouldn't you watch it? It's great viewing.
But you always cover the open base. I mean, this is just, again, first rule of logistics for how you work the infield. No one's there. Baez gets there. Frazier's trying to run over. They throw the ball. Ball gets away. Baez gets the second. It was just a comedy of errors. It's not a hat tip to Baez. It's a real shocking performance on the part of the Pirates.
So just to clarify, first baseman Will Craig, all he had to do was stand on the base. And
yeah, he had been pulled off towards home plate. So
yeah, but he could have gone back.
All he had to do is go back. Or, which would have been probably what I would have done, is you bust towards Baez. He's sort of jogging along with Baez at the same
time. You know why he's jogging? You know why he's jogging? Because he knows he should have stepped on first, and he's starting to think about it. And you can see the wheels turning.
No,
and
he's like, disagree.
Oh, man.
No. He just
he slows down and he freezes.
It's the opposite. It's the opposite of the wheels turning. He even said, I just stopped thinking. I mean, he just stopped thinking. He thought it was just, I'll just, quickly get to him. He'll eventually stop going backwards. But what was unbelievable about it, too, is that he should be able to see the runner at third base out of the corner of his eye. He's going towards there. He waits to throw the ball to the catcher until the absolute last minute. It was a befuddling mistake, and I think he owned it. Respect to Craig for that.
First of all, he can't say he just wasn't thinking, because if he says he was thinking, then he's just the dumbest guy ever. So he can't admit to not thinking. But all I have to say is thank goodness – that he didn't step on first, because what a joy to go to a ballpark after over 150 years or roughly 150 years of baseball. You could still go and see something you've never seen on a professional level before. And I think that that's one of the great things about baseball. You've never seen it all.
Guys, can I flash something up here? One, the starting pitcher for the Pirates, Tyler Anderson, admitted no one was yelling at Craig, just step on first. So none of them had that thought. And then the Pirates manager, Derek Shelton, came out and said, it's my fault. I didn't make sure they knew the rules. What? Professional baseball players.
That is classic manner. And we've seen this more and more and this is what really distinguishes Tony La Russa. When La Russa's calling out his players when they have a disagreement, every manager, all they're trying to do is serve as cover for their players.
That's it.
So they're taking the responsibility for anything that happens now, for the most part, on the field. So the players can feel good about themselves, can feel their esteem, can play better.
Yes. And that's what makes those managers such great communicators, so they can just communicate like that and be so one with the players.
Moving on.
Make them feel good about themselves.
Moving on. Okay. View to Akil. It's the Badu watch.
It's Akil Badu, of course. For those of you new to the show,
we were
so enamored with Akil Badu when he had a strong start in April, but then things petered out. He went through a 4-47 slide. 4-47 slide.
Oh.
And since the day of recording, he went 1-10, 0 RBI, 0 runs. Oh, but man. Hang on a second.
Okay.
Why the hell are the Tigers not sending him down? Well, he's somehow, in the month of May, he has a .427 on base percentage. He manages to get on base somehow. He'll draw the walks, he'll get hit by a pitch, whatever. But still, it doesn't bring in the runs. And that's how terrible the Tigers are. And basically, the Tigers are doing an accidental experiment. It's unheard of to have all these youngsters on your team and who have had zero AAA experience. Casey Mize, I guess we can call him their ace now. He's never thrown a pitch in AAA, and he's doing all his work experience at the major league level. So is Akil Badu.
That's true more at the pitchers. I think, you've got some veterans in their lineup. You have Jonathan Scope, you have Candelario. These guys have been around for a little while. They're just a mess of a team. I feel for Casey Mize, who's thrown quite well this year. But it's difficult when you have such a really anemic offense.
But I'll predict that Akil Badu is still on the major league level by our next show. Moving on.
There's a simple solution to Akil's problems. Just get mum and dad back in the stands, and I can guarantee you'll be hitting home runs again. Okay, bad news for the New York Mets. Big Dave, right-handed Noah Syndergaard, been shut down for 6 weeks with right elbow inflammation. The good news, no structural damage in his elbow, because, of course, and his surgically repaired ulnar collateral ligament is intact. As we know, last year he's been coming back from Tommy John surgery, but not good news for the Mets.
Well, it's never good when the manager says we're praying for his return, because we're going to need a little bit more than that, I think.
But you say that, but Taijuan Walker and Marcus Stroman have been great behind DeGrom. They're in first place, man. You are such a salty New Yorker.
Hang on. That's what the manager said. I didn't say that.
You said it like it meant something to you.
The pitch, I find it hysterical that, divine intervention is required to get your pitcher back on the mound. But we were just talking about Noah Syndergaard, and we're hoping that that he gets back maybe by August. But as to Josh's point, I think the Mets pitching has been as good as you could possibly ask for, in particular Stroman and folks like that. DeGrom, in his limited time, has been himself. But the bullpen has been great. And, you know, they are in first place despite having an incredibly long injured list. They're 25 and 20, and they're up 7 games in the loss column as of Sunday morning with Philadelphia in second place.
I think we can safely say Noah wants to get back because he is, of course, a free agent at the end of the season. So he needs to, if he is going to be doing anything there. Okay, well, talking of injuries, from the sublime to the ridiculous, Zach, please, Zach, boys. I mean, lost a fight with a shirt. What is it about baseball and hilarious? I mean, that's the only way to describe them. Hilarious injuries. I don't even know. How do you lose a fight with a shirt?
I think it's too much time in the clubhouse. I think more than any other sport, you get to the ballpark early. There's a lot of sitting around. My favorite story was a pitcher by the name of Steve Sparks, who in the clubhouse told everyone he could rip a phone book. For our younger listeners, phone book used to be this book where you'd have all the names of everyone's telephone number, and it was thick. And he said, I could rip it. He dislocated his shoulder and ended up injuring his shoulder as a result of trying to rip it. So I think there's a lot of free time. There's silliness. I remember Clint Barmas, shortstop for the Colorado Rockies, was carrying a hunk of meat upstairs and fell and hurt himself. You know, they always say, I'm not an athlete, I'm a baseball player. And maybe we're starting to understand why that terminology occurs, because outside of the field, you may do magical things on the field, but outside of the field, maybe these guys are a little klutzy.
What about Sammy Sosa? The sneeze. Remember? He hurt his back by sneezing.
That's,
oh, I think, you know, we know why that happened.
If you take enough juice and your oblique is oversized, anything's going to tear that
sucker. Sure.
Okay, thank you, boys. Well, moving on. Last week, I'm not even sure we mentioned it. Mariners catcher Jose Godoy becomes the 20,000th player to debut in MLB history. And we got another record as Josh Donaldson records the 2 millionth MLB run. How about that?
Can I put on my best David Lengel hat here and get a little cynical? Is that okay, guys? Can I David Lengel up for a moment?
Fair, one
is more than enough.
So to me, these sort of statistics are a little bit like Mother's Day and Valentine's Day, just made up events to try and create a commercial atmosphere.
It's
and
league
the reason
office
for this
stuff.
Is that we don't really know if that was the 2 millionth run or he was the 20,000th player, because early statistics are not exact enough. So we're kind of taking a spitballing ballpark figure, and really Major League Baseball is just trying to use something to make a point. And the point's
it's
valid, which
release.
Is that baseball has been around for a very long time. It has been America's pastime, and it has a great and illustrious history. But these individual events, it's honestly, it's like forcing people to go buy a box of chocolates in a little, you know, heart box.
And nobody cares. By the way,
I knew David would support this because it was a David Lengel.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares who was the 2 millionth. Hey, who was the 1 millionth run? Anybody got
yes,
it?
Yeah, that was a big deal.
I'll tell you what. It was Bob Watson in 1975.
Yeah,
is that true? Very good.
Now here's
did you know that before you researched this story? No.
Let me enlighten you about these stupid records. Actually,
okay.
The first run, major league run, apparently was in 1876. So first of April. No fooling. 1876. That was the first ever run. It took 99 years to get the 1 millionth run, and then it took 46 years to get the 2 millionth run. So, of course, with this day of expansion and more teams and more
dead ball era
kind of thing. So, but then I read somewhere else that they're going to predict that the 3 millionth run could be in about 25 to 30 years. Because we just got
no, not the way it's going right now.
By the way, do you know who criticized making a big deal out of this, of all people? John Thorne. Major League Baseball's historian said, this is really cute that we're trying to make a big deal out of this, but it's impossible to really nail it.
It's like the 1 millionth.
I'm sure Manfred will slap his wrists for that.
Yes. Well, moving on.
Okay, Eric, thank you for that. That is leadoff batter number one. We move on to our second up, our Albies of today's show. And it is a sticky situation, to say the least. It's all been kicking off in Cardinals land. Giovanni Gallegos' cap was removed because supposedly it had some substances which the umpires weren't too happy about or were questioning. The manager, Mike Stilt, went absolutely AWOL, basically on the basis that this is something that MLB have not been policing. And now suddenly to make an example of one player is ridiculous. And the big question is, one, Do we make this, do we just ignore it and let pitchers put anything on their caps to utilize, or do we actually police this properly? To be honest, both seem problematical. What's your thoughts on this, JC?
Now more than ever, we should be policing it big time. Pitchers have enough advantages as is. I do understand, and you know, when I represented players, I remember a guy we represented who was a 4A player, played at AAA. He would always put pine tar in his glove, and he would do it pretty obviously because people would get away with it at the time. It needs to now be locked down. They need to make sure that doesn't happen. You know, Driveline, which is a very famous baseball training center and analytics, Trevor Bauer is an acolyte of it. They've done studies to show that you can really increase spin rate with a sticky substance on a ball because you get that better snap. Pitchers don't need it. We need to be able to level the playing field, and this is one way to do it. We're talking about moving back the mound. Well, let's first stop having sticky substances on baseballs. Let's really, really lay into it on this.
Do you know what the Phillies catcher said, Dave? JT Realmuto said that if pitchers get to use these substances, then hitters should be allowed to use steroids. I mean, the point he's trying to make, he's not recommending that.
I understand.
The point he's trying to make.
And he was a little tongue-in-cheek in that.
Yeah, it was tongue-in-cheek. But the point he's making is a good one. That in his eyes, as a hitter, it's such a significant advantage that if you're going to do that, then hitters have got to be allowed to have an advantage as well to even up the playing field.
First of all, I agree with everything Josh is saying. I think at one point in the not-so-distant past, a little bit of cheating was kind of part of baseball's lore. Spitballs, trying to get away with things every now and then. Major League, the film, of course, had that character who was putting stuff on his hat. You know, it's part of the fabric of the game, but you can't... Now, when you know, we have the three true outcomes, the strikeout, the home run, or the walk, we can't afford to have that stuff anymore. And Josh Donaldson, you know, said, hey, you guys better be careful. He claims to have a catalog of proof or evidence or of knowledge of pitchers that are former teammates who have been doctoring the ball. And Theo Epstein came out, I believe, not so long ago and said in the next few weeks, there's going to be some major announcements about this. So I think Josh is right. They have to come out. They have to just stop it. There's already way too much advantage.
Yeah.
And the sooner the better.
And you're right, Dave. There was an era where it was fun, where was, you know, cute. You had Gaylord Perry with a little twinkle in his eye, you know, throwing the emery board out of his pocket, things of that nature.
Right.
That time has passed. You've got to figure out a way to save baseball in a certain way. And this is one easy fix.
Just picking up on another aspect of this story, back in April, multiple balls thrown by Los Angeles Dodgers pitcher and reigning NL Cy Young Award winner Trevor Bauer reportedly collected, sent to a lab to determine whether or not they had violated this rule, which is 602C. And the question here is that Bauer himself has actually talked about mixed substances to create a sort of stickum that increases the spin rate on the ball you just talked about. He's also accused others of doing the same. Seems a bit bizarre to actually highlight the fact that he's done it. Not surprisingly, they started looking at him. So this is already a story that's out there. Is this yet another problem where MLB, the story's there, they've said they're going to do something about it, but they're not. They're fudging it. And that's what really needs to be addressed.
You can hear every single person saying this is institutionally accepted, so you can't selectively prosecute people for it.
Right.
And that's the problem. You're right, Goldie.
So you're in agreement with Mike Schilt that's he justified his rant.
Because they all do it, and it needs to be solved. And Major League Baseball needs to do something, and it sounds like they may very well be on the path to doing so.
To be fair, you know, we don't know the backstory. You know, Major League Baseball could have said to the umps, hey, starting today, you guys see anything, I want hats off, all that stuff out. They could have had a talking to, and that could have just been the first time.
Yeah.
Well, typically when that happens, you have to alert the Players Association. When I was representing players, whenever something came down on high from Major League Baseball, the Players Association was warned, then all their agents who were certified were told about this, and they were supposed to then...
So the umps didn't have the power to do that on the field?
It's just something that is typically, if you're saying that Major League Baseball on high is saying like, hey, we're done with, we're going to start...
Right.
Really dealing with this, that the players should know or would know.
Okay, we're unanimous that it needs to be addressed, and then it needs to be black and white. Fix it.
All right.
Okay.
Stop having press releases about 2 million runs and fix the game. Let's go.
And this is the part where I usually get in trouble for saying this. I just got to say it again. You know, it's
it's a family show.
It's a family show, first of all, but also if it's kind of like playing with yourself, nothing wrong with it unless you get caught.
Oh, man.
Okay. No.
Moving
no,
on.
No, no, no.
Wow.
No, no, no.
It's hard to get that into
now. I can't. Now I can't show. Now I can't give this show to my kids to watch. Thanks a lot.
Because I know they're champion at the bit, right?
Yeah,
Daddy, Daddy, what's the new Johnny and Josh podcast show dropping, Dad?
Yeah.
Not a family show.
Okay, third batter up. It is longtime Major League umpire Joe West, known as Cowboy Joe, for his country music exploits. Made history, boys, on Tuesday night, working his, and this is extraordinary, 5,376th regular game in his illustrious career, which has eclipsed the record of Bill Clem, a record that stood for 80 years. Now, I know you boys all see chomping at the bit. You want to talk about Joe West. So who's going first? Dave, you want to go first?
I'll go first. Josh, a few things. First, Bill Clem, who you mentioned there in passing, still the great umpire. He umpired behind the plate, I think, double the amount of times as Joe West. So Joe West's games have not been all behind the plate, which is really, to me, the greatest measure of an umpire. But here's the thing about Joe West. I remember an umpire I knew when I lived in England who would always say, "It's not a strike or a ball until I call it." Joe West is that kind of umpire, and that's exactly what you don't want an umpire. He believed he was part of the game and that it was about him. The best umpires are the ones that sort of work behind the scenes. They do their job. They don't bring attention to themselves.
In any sport, you could say that.
In any sport, agreed. But baseball, you know, you have quite a relationship. I remember, I think in 2010, 30% of Major League players ranked him as the worst umpire in all of Major League Baseball.
Worse than Angel Hernandez?
Yeah. It's shocking, but like, Angel wasn't even, C.K. Buckner was considered the worst, and
oh, wow,
Joe West. So, you know, and there were a few that liked him, and he has had relationships. I saw Dave Freeze, longtime St. Louis Cardinal player, played for the Dodgers at the end of his career, who had, you know, said a really touching story about how they had been friends over his career. So I'm not saying he's a bad guy, but I'm saying that he has always been a bit of an attention hawk. He's always said, "Look at me." A lot of players and managers have suggested just as much, and that's not what you want out of a great umpire, in my opinion. But I think one manager had said that a lot of the attention seeker was to sell more albums for his own music. And so, you know, I don't want to malign the guy. I mean, it's a great career. It's a long career. There, you should always give credit to durability and history. But just being there the longest doesn't make you the greatest.
Can we be honest about something? Umpires are always, they're a little weird. It's a weird thing to be an umpire. Just generally speaking, that's my job. You're not playing. You know, what is it? I interviewed Angel Hernandez and Al Clark. Al Clark got fired for taking his business class tickets and downgrading them to coach and pocketing the difference, and then went to jail for 4 months for selling BS baseball memorabilia. And then I interviewed Angel Hernandez, who was just one of the weirdest guys you've ever run into in your life. And after having those two experiences, there's been several weird umpire baseball stories over the years, and it just makes you wonder, like, who are these guys?
I think the other question that's still out there, right, is this record gonna stand forever? Are we gonna have robo umpires soon? And C-3PO will have the record here, and we won't have any more umpires to add that human touch. And that's the upside, right, is the human touch of it all, the interaction. You know, if you watch old videos of umpires, you know, getting into fights with Earl Weaver, you know, on the base path. It's part of the show. Exactly.
Which therefore means they have to be part of the show. And on that point about the record ever being beaten, he started umpiring at the age of 23. The norm now is 30. And therefore, and most umpires these days don't work more than about 120 games a season. So according to the calculations, it would take an umpire who never missed a game for 45 years to threaten his mark. So unless they're related to Cal Ripken Jr., I don't think this record is ever going to be beaten. And boys, I just want to take a slight counterpoint. There's no game without umpires. So even if they are a little bit of a maverick, a bit out in left field, at the end of the day, you don't have a game without officials. So we should show them respect.
But Gouldy, I don't disagree with that. But again, there's a fine line, right, between wanting to be the show and helping the show go on.
Yep, I understand.
Nigel Owens.
Baseball umpires, I think, want to be the show, generally speaking, more so than in other sports, because they have prevalent place behind the plate where you hear their voice and you know who they are, and they have their own strike zones. You know, they interpret the rules, you know, their own way, and that gives them more of a spotlight. They were great.
My two cents about Joe West, I'll try to keep it brief, and I'll try to keep the language civilized. Yours truly was ejected off the field twice by Joe West.
Wow.
No.
Once in Montreal Olympic Stadium.
So you have an axe to grind.
Where I was told to get the hell off the field because the game was about to begin, but the game was like 10 minutes away from first pitch. And so myself and my cameraman had to leave the grounds of the Olympic Stadium. And then the second time was at Comerica Park, was right in the middle of an interview with Jim Leyland pregame by the Tigers dugout. Luckily, I had just finished the interview, and Joe West comes over to me and told me again, get the bleep off this field. Why the hell are you still doing here? And I actually said, you again. I almost wanted him to give me like the whole, like, you know, you're out of here kind of thing. Just so I got ejected twice by Joe West out of the game kind of thing. So, but nothing. What I did not appreciate about Joe West, he was presiding over the 1981 NLCS LA Dodgers against Montreal Expos, and he said he was happy with the result because he doesn't think that a World Series should be going north of the border. Would you believe that? So there.
Wow, that's. You know what Eric didn't tell you about that time in Montreal is that when he got thrown off the field, he was actually on the pitcher's mound and having a catch with his cameraman. That's what he didn't tell you.
Well, that was with one hand. The other hand, he was eating a hot dog, right?
Right.
For those of you who either agree or disagree with us here, there actually are two hashtags out there right now. One is hashtag Joe West is the worst, and the other one is hashtag Leave Joe West Alone. So make your own mind up and online and see what you think. Movie on.
Okay, thank you for that, boys. Controversial stuff. Seventh inning stretch. I'm giving it a yawn because it's been a tiring day supporting and leading the legendary Cobras, Caution Rugby Club, in their 13th and final year.
Sadly, this week in local rugby, starring Johnny Gould.
Sadly, there is no book on this subject, but hopefully there is a baseball book of the week, courtesy of the producer.
There is, actually, this week's baseball book of the week. I'm going to go spooky on you. Stephen King, who's written such eerie and spooky books such as The Dead Zone, Firestarter, and a load of other, Shawshank Redemption. You know, so you think of all the...
That wasn't a book, it was a novella.
It's a novella. That's very good, from different seasons. Yes. And also he's, you know, really It, you know, with Penny Whistle. So
what's the one with the cars, Maximum Overdrive?
Maximum Overdrive was a terrible film and a terrible movie.
I liked the film. I thought it was all right.
And Carrie, of course, yes. Yeah. You know, and Misery. But this week, I give you the scary suspense novella. It's called Blockade Billy, written by Stephen King. Ooh, suspenseful. So somehow it's all about intrigue and mystery and suspense with a baseball backdrop. And to be honest, is it a Pulitzer Prize winning book? No. But even Stephen King said, it took him 2 weeks to write this. He just wanted to write a baseball fiction book.
Can you believe that?
He loves baseball. Big Red Sox fan, right?
He's a huge Red Sox fan. He's also written a nonfiction book called Faithful about his time following the 2004 Boston Red Sox.
He wrote a book in 2 weeks?
He wrote a book at 120 pages. Now listen, it took him 2 weeks to write this. It took me a day to read this. I found this in a secondhand bookstore. Blockade Billy. It's also got another little short story in there called Mortality. A baseball book. Yeah, give it a shot. Blockade Billy, Stephen King, all about murder and intrigue and baseball. What's not to like? Moving on, pop culture, when it intertwines with baseball. And this today I'll be going to into baseball, yes, absolutely, but I'll be going to TV shows. Sadly, I like to, you know, for those who don't know, Gavin McLeod, Captain Steubing of the Love Boat, passed away.
Rest in peace.
So for those you don't remember the Love Boat, yes, it's one of those things. And, you know,
The Love Boat.
The Love Boat, exactly. Now, the Love Boat was pretty much a retirement home for washed-up actors, let's just face it.
Yay!
and a future congressman, Fred Grandy.
And
he once got, I got to tell you real quick, Fred Grandy's story. He once got into an elevator and someone said, hey, Gopher, get me to the Lido deck. And Fred Grandy was so pissed he got the guy fired.
But yeah, so Fred Grandy, who played Gopher, yeah, he was, but that's the thing. It was either the retirement home for washed up actors, or it was a springboard for before they were famous actors like Billy Crystal and Tom Hanks kind of thing. There's one particular episode with, and it pains me to say that in this one episode, John Mills, legendary actor, Academy Award British actor, was on the Love Boat with Haley Mills, his daughter. But that was a side story in this one episode, because the main story in this one Love Boat episode in 1979 was Reggie Jackson was on board. That's right, climb aboard. We're expecting you. Reggie Jackson appeared because apparently the whole premise of this one episode, he was Isaac, the bartender's best friend.
Oh.
Just wanted a little holiday where no one knew who he was, so he can just escape an anonymity on a cruise. And then during the cruise, he was getting pissed off that no one recognized him, that he was Reggie Jackson. And so hilarity ensues.
Sounds like Reggie.
But that's the thing. But you know, sadly, that only because Gavin McLeod died, and I tried to find like a baseball connection. Yes, Reggie Jackson appeared at the height of his fame, 1979, pretty much, you know, the year after he won the 1978 World Series with the Yankees, and at the pinnacle of his career. So he wasn't a washed-up player yet, you know, on the Love Boat. He was at the pinnacle of his career on the Love Boat. And just another side note, I had a thing for Vicky Steubing, the Captain Steubing's
really?
Daughter.
You have a thing.
She was my age.
Did she have red hair?
How many actors?
I know you like redheads.
What about Julie? What about Julie?
Julie, the cruise director, I did, but sadly she got fired from the show because she had a drug problem, unfortunately. But I don't want to taint the legacy of Julie the cruise.
Why you have to bring that up?
Because you guys did.
Can I just point out, you have literally mentioned every actress from the sort of 80s and 90s at some stage you had the hots for.
Moving on. Now we go into the trivia question. Now I've been ejected twice in Major League Baseball, but some other guys have been ejected more than me, and they were in the form of managers. I asked you earlier that, you know, Bobby Cox owns the record for 161 ejections by an umpire in Major League Baseball. Tony La Russa is a current active manager with 88 ejections from the game. But then I asked you, which one of these three is second all-time current managers, that is, for most ejections? Was it A, Joe Maddon? Was it B, Terry Francona? Was it C, Bob Melvin? And who's going to go first? I'm going to pick on Johnny Gould, who still hasn't watched Spinal Tap, by the way, to go first.
I've absolutely no clue, I'm going to go with...
I think of the biggest hothead, you know.
Terry Francona.
Okay.
He's very mild-mannered.
But no apparent reason.
Josh Shetwin, who will you be picking?
All right, I'll give you my thought process for this. So we were talking earlier about managers nowadays have to protect their players. I sort of feel like Joe Maddon was the first guy in this era to be the, I'm going to protect my guys. And one way in which you always do that is when your player gets into an argument with the umpire, you go out there and you get tossed for him, make the player feel good. Plus Terry Francona with the back issues, I just don't see him going out there. And Bob Melvin, yeah, I don't think he was ever a player's manager as much, or still really isn't as much. Go with Joe Maddon.
Okay, and then David Langell's reason of thinking?
I think Bob Melvin is a general manager's manager, probably more than anything, which is, hey, he's had a great career, by the way. I will go with Bo Mel, because things can get frustrating when you have 6 feet of crap on you all the time out in Oakland.
Okay, well,
50 feet of crap. Excuse me, 50 feet of crap.
In no particular order, Bob Melvin has 46 ejections.
That's nothing.
Terry Francona, 43 ejections.
Holy.
Disaster.
It's a bad back.
Joe Maddon, 57 ejections.
Good
thus
thought
far
process
and counting.
By Josh. He was right about that.
So basically, Joe Maddon
taking his team on those dumb trips to movie theaters and stuff with bowling alleys and
drinking
dressing
wine,
up day and all this crap.
Joe Maddon needs
great communicator.
Joe Maddon needs 105 more to tie or surpass, I should say, Bobby Cox. Well, I don't think that's going to happen. I think Bobby Cox's ejection thing is intact. And that's your trivia of the week.
Thank you, guys. We're going to move on now to the mailbag. Massive thanks. We've had loads in this week. Loads. Quick one. Simon Roberts. I want one person to answer. So, JT, Simon Roberts, Rays, again, going above and beyond. Can they make it to October? They've gone 9-1 last 10. They're top of the East in the American League.
It's just a great division, right? Other than the Orioles, you look at any of those teams, you look at the Yankees, even the Red Sox, you look at the Blue Jays, and you look at the Rays, any one of them could win this. As such, I would say, you know, wild card, they've got a shot to get in there. But again, it's just so congested, it's gonna be hard for any one team to pick. Fence sitting, ding.
Dave? Mark Jones on Facebook asks, is the Yankees' lack of hitting a concern, or is it being overlooked with their stellar starting pitching and bullpen? I mean, I wouldn't call their starting pitching stellar. They've got a couple of decent arms, but anyway, yeah. That's just my thoughts. What's your thoughts?
Isn't Kluber hurt now? Something.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Yeah. Yes, quite seriously.
So they have problems.
They do have problems, especially when you look at runs scored. You've got Tampa Bay with 264, Boston with 267, Toronto with 252. Yankees 199. This is as of recording tonight on Sunday.
They're not that good, and you know they're eating up on all the bottom feeding stuff, and it's going to be tough to compete with Tampa, who are finding their feet right now. And you know they have a lot of issues and question marks. They don't, you know, they got Brett Gardner out there every day now, so yeah, they have problems.
Hey, but Dave, they have so much mystique that the mystique is going to carry them above. And mystique that has never gone away.
Mystique, the stripper mystique?
They give gift baskets, right?
Anytime you want to talk gift baskets, I'm your man.
I read an article somewhere that somebody wrote that they're pretty boring. I don't know. Moving on.
Yeah.
One more from Twitter. This is at UK Rays. Why is there such a lack of parity between the best and the worst MLB teams? Unlike in football, it can't all be down to money because, and he rightly points out, Rays, A's, they show a lot of consistency. They're always competitive and they're right near the bottom of the financial piles. So why are teams like the Pirates so bad? And that's my good mate Rolf, who's in the Behind Home Plate Rookie League.
Well, what they're trying to do is these teams are dumping, right? So it's by choice too often. The teams that are at the bottom are determining, you know what, we're not getting anywhere. We're going to cut salary. We're going to try and get some high draft picks, get two or three players who are then going to serve as the nucleus in the future. So you're right. It's teams are choosing whether to or whether not to be competitive. But to be honest, if you look at the divisions, there's a lot of good races right now. It's not, yes, there are some teams, you know, your Orioles, your Tigers of the world, your Pirates, but look at the different standings, Gouldie. I mean, there are a lot of divisions that are very competitive right now.
I agreed, but amazes me when you started reeling off the not so good teams that you didn't mention the D-backs who've lost their last 13 games, yeah. Guys.
As of Sunday morning.
Yeah, sure. As of Sunday morning, they've lost 13 games.
I mean, the teams that are bad are horrific, and a lot of that
horrific.
I believe that a lot of that's dumping because you've just made a determination that, hey, we're not going to be competitive. Let's cut salaries. We'll still get some fans. We'll try and get a few draft picks, and you know, we'll go back to the Houston Astros model.
And by the way, so well the Pirates them. Are stacked. They have a lot of really good-looking kids, and they're going to be back sooner than you think. So look out for Pirates in the next couple of years.
I've got to say, guys, we've had loads in on Facebook and Twitter, and a huge thanks to everybody for making the effort. We want you to be part of the show, so do get in touch.
There's one from Graham Byrne that I sent you.
Indeed there is, which if you just keep chatting, guys, I'll quickly get that up.
Stand by for Graham Byrne.
Graham Byrne from Ireland. Actually, gentlemen. Graham Byrne, a friend of the show. He's from Three Men, Two Balls, at Three Men, Two Balls.
That's his handle, Three Men, Two Balls?
He's actually got a reputable podcast himself in the Republic of Ireland.
You did,
but he's spreading the Johnny and Josh love as well. Sorry, it's a family show. But yes, he had a question to you, Johnny, did he not?
He did indeed, buddy. It's has any team ever tanked for the number one overall draft pick, or is the draft not as big a deal in MLB as it is in the NFL and NHL? Good question. Any team ever tanked for the number one overall draft pick?
I mean, to the previous point, right, is that teams do try and tank for better performance in the draft. That said, no, it's not the same as the NBA or the NFL because players tend to be more major, top level ready when they come out of college basketball or college football. It's not the same case with baseball. There's more of a development process. But yeah, I mean, David was just about to say it, the Houston Astros, you know, 1 year is not going to help, but you need like 2 or 3 years where you get those players, you get the Carlos Correas and the high in the draft, you get a few guys, and all of a sudden you can compete if you build around that nucleus.
The NHL actually had a problem with teams tanking. This is about 15, 20 years ago, where it almost became so blatantly obvious that teams were just giving up the last 5 days of the season to finish last. So what the NHL ends up doing is saying, okay, we're just going to have a lottery. The bottom three teams will go into a lottery, and then one of you will get a higher seating in the lottery kind of thing. So
The NBA's done that for years.
And the NBA's
it's great from a attention seeking standpoint, right? To have those sort of events. I mean, it helped the NBA a tremendous amount. So Major League Baseball has talked about ways to try and avoid tanking as well, too, whether there's a sort of financial component if you don't have a salary that's high enough, things like of that nature, like sort of a combined team salary.
It must be fair to say, though, Josie, I mean, the NFL draft is a massive TV event. So, dude. I mean, presumably the MLB draft doesn't compare.
They've been trying in years. You know, I remember 10 years ago, I wrote an article about Major League Baseball trying to up their draft, and they've tried to do that in the first round. And it's a better produced event, but it's never going to be the same thing, because when you look at the NFL and someone drafts a quarterback who's going to be their starting quarterback the next year, there's a tremendous amount of enthusiasm for that. Spencer Torkelson gets drafted by the Tigers, and you know, best case scenario is he's still a few years away. There are very few players. I think of Pete Incaviglia, Bob Horner, players who went straight from the amateur ranks to major leagues. It's a rarity.
So. And plus, nobody knows who these guys are. Nobody knows who they are. You go college football, these guys are celebrities already.
But nobody knows who
they are.
But to that point, Dave, that's changing a little bit. I think college
a little bit, but come on,
improved in its profile.
Josh, a little bit.
I agree. It's not the same. Nowhere near the same. People know the Vandy pitchers now, Vanderbilt.
So it pretty much ends there.
Guys, this fascinates me. As a Brit, this does fascinate me. Why are NFL players ready, pretty much, you know, often ready just to go straight in and be considered for selection, whereas MLB players seem to have to go through single A, double A, triple A, this enormously elongated education? Well, why the difference?
It's a combination of things. I mean, first, there is no, I mean, they're trying to change this, and they've changed this in the NBA to a certain extent. There's no minor league system in the same way, so they have to sort of go there. It's just the nature of the way it's structured.
There's nowhere to go.
The professionalism historically of college sports has been effectively a minor league system. So that's been very much true with basketball and football for a very long time. And we're seeing it a little bit more with baseball. And I think it's going to change a little bit, right? Because the minor league system in baseball is contracting. So players are going to have to get there. But the bottom line is baseball is such a developmental sport. That craft to get there, it takes a long time. And players, more often than not, are late bloomers. You see players, they're not good enough at 18, but all of a sudden when they're 25, 26, they develop in a way. It's just the nature of that sport that makes it more appropriate to have a minor league process.
Interesting. Great stuff. Right, guys, if you want to get in touch with us, you know we're on Facebook, you know that we're on Twitter. Look at the things, the like button.
Yeah, thank you, Johnny.
Down below. Hey, didn't even need a cue.
Thank you, yes. We need it. Likes and subscribe.
Yes, please do, guys. Please, please, please. We're desperate. But also, don't forget that there's loads else happening in the Ted Fred stable. If fantasy baseball is your gig, then do join Jimbo and myself behind home plate at BHP Pod. And guess what? Very exciting coming up very soon. A certain Mr. Josh Chetwin, a renowned and official hater of fantasy baseball, is going to be appearing on at BHP Pod.
I was going to ask you when I was getting the invite.
You're getting the invite, big guy.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I was discussing it with Jimbo only yesterday. We've also, of course, got other shows for you to think about. Eric on the Slapshot Smack Talk, which for Twitter.
And I'll be appearing on that as a guest on Slapshot. Well,
we've got
that.
No budget for guests, so we'll just get each other on. At Slapshot Talk, if you want to get in touch with Eric. And don't forget the Nat Coon Show as well. Natty Boy on the NC Show. The man isn't just about NFL. It's about everything across the board. Do listen in. We're Nat on TalkSport, etc. Don't forget Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. We're everywhere. And we want you to hit those like buttons. Hit those subscribe buttons.
Like everything. our Twitter handle, our YouTube, check out our YouTube channel. If you want to see how ugly we look, go to our YouTube channel, please.
Great stuff, guys. Thank you for getting me through this emotional journey that has been the conclusion of the mighty Corsham and Cobras rugby team, which obviously has nothing to do with baseball, but I was very emotional when I came on. Nothing. And it's been a joy having your company, as always. Thank you to Big Dave, to JC and Eric, the producer. And thank you to you guys for listening as well. We look forward to having your company same time next week on the Johnny and Josh Show.